Welcome to the Washington Heights Church Weekly Podcast. We do this to help people feel at home at WHC, where we help people meet and follow Jesus. Thank you for joining us. Well, today we are talking to somebody from the bigger Christian community, and one of the hopes that we have for this podcast is that we just get to hear from some voices who are seeing what God's doing in the bigger picture, what's happening in the church in America and beyond. And today I'm joined by Dr. Paul Borden. And Paul is familiar with Washington Heights Church. He's been here a few times, but he has a lot of experience that just helps us to tune into what God is doing in the church. So, Paul, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Paul, why don't you share with people and give them a little bit of a sense, what are the different things that you have done through the years? What kind of ways have you been involved in the church?
It's interesting, Roy. A couple months ago, it dawned on me that this June I will have been ordained for 50 years. So I have done a number of different things. I pastored in a small church. I was a co-pastor in a large urban church where on a given Sunday, we would have 11 services in four locations, and about the church was about your size in terms of attendance. I have been a dean at a Bible college and also at a large seminary. I helped create a Christian organization that worked with many of the mega churches and larger churches across the U.S. I have spent 15 years in a denominational position where we saw God transform a lot of our churches that moved from really a heading toward death to beginning to grow and reproducing. And God let us plant over 100 congregations. And for the last 30 years, I've spent probably most of my time working with pastors and congregations in the United States and Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and have a ministry with other congregations that I never thought I would have or ever anticipated when I was much younger. So that's kind of an overview of the things that God has called me to do.
So the answer is you haven't been doing much, huh?
Well, the problem is I can't hold a job. That's my problem.
No, we are glad to know you, Paul, and appreciate your vast experience there. And I want to ask you a question that I think really feeds into a lot of what you've seen and done. You know, one of the big discussions in our day is just about the nature of the church, and maybe to just put it in lay terms, who is it for? So what would you say, Paul, is the purpose or the mission of the church?
First of all, let me respond by saying I think that is the most fundamental question that pastors and congregations and church boards need to ask is, what is the biblical mission or mandate of the church? And I really believe that the purpose of the church is primarily to mobilize Christians to reach people who are not yet Christians, or for disciples to make disciples. In Matthew 16, Jesus Christ says, "I will build my church." And I think in the next line, he tells us why, so that hell doesn't win. That the purpose of the church is basically to get people who do not know Jesus, who do not have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, to become brand new disciples of Jesus, and in essence, to depopulate Satan's zip code. Now, most churches in our nation they see that as a purpose, but not the purpose. And yet I find when it is the purpose, that's when churches really begin to grow. They begin to see new life. They begin to see baptisms. This is followed in, you know, 1 Peter chapter 2, where the Apostle Paul, quoting from what God said to Israel on Mount Sinai when they were getting the law, that you're a special people, you're a particular group, and that the church has been put together to proclaim the glories of Jesus, that that's the role. And then he goes on all the way through chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3 to talk about how the church is to be involved in seeing people who are not yet disciples become disciples of Jesus Christ. We've just recently been through the whole Passion Week and talked about Good Friday and then Easter. I like to remind people that Jesus, in a sense, has two bodies. His first body, which he still has, is the body that he was given when he came to earth as both God and human. But then he went back to heaven and he created a second body, which is the church. And that in his first body, Jesus came to seek and to save those who are lost. And I believe the role of Jesus in his second body is exactly the same, that we are to seek and to save those who are lost. A few months back, when we were able to travel and gather and shop before the whole issue with the virus, I was sent on a mission by my wife to a very particular store to buy a very particular item. In fact, she now takes pictures of these items and puts it on my phone so I can just show the salesperson and come home with the correct thing. I walked into the store. It was not very busy. And there were two or three salespeople talking about some issue, some problem. And while I stood there at the counter for probably close to 5 minutes, because I was looking at my watch, they were talking about their issues and ignoring me. Now, normally I would have left, but I was on a mission for my wife. And when they finally came to wait on me, I realized that their focus had been on themselves, not on the person that they were designed to serve, which was the customer. That's often the problem many churches have. We spend all of our time talking to ourselves, ministering to ourselves, serving ourselves, forgetting the fact that that's not why we were created. Or if I could use the metaphor of a commander of a Coast Guard station, as that commander works with the maritime personnel that make up the Coast Guard, he trains them because they need training. He feeds them well because they need to be strong. He will even give them R&R. But all of that is so that when the storms hit, the ships are in trouble, people are drowning, they go out on a mission. And again, I find our churches often do training. They often feed people. They help people enjoy life as Christians, but it's all for the purpose of the Christian. And as I look at the New Testament and what Jesus is saying is that the reason he created the church, the number one reason, was so that the church would be making more disciples for Jesus Christ. And it's interesting to me, as I look at what God is doing around the world, in Africa and India and Asia, where the churches are growing, that's because they understand that the church is there primarily to help people meet Jesus Christ, become a reproducing disciple of Jesus who makes more disciples. And when that happens, the church thrives.
So, Paul, I think you've already answered that question, but let me ask a follow-up. If reaching people who do not yet know Jesus is the mission of the church, but is often viewed as a mission, a piece of it, what will often occupy that center spot there?
Well, I find what often occupies the center spot is what I call the consumer rights of disciples. In other words, I have come to Jesus and I'm now part of the church. I'm giving the church my time when I come and worship or I'm involved in a small group. I want the church to minister to the needs of my children or my infants or teenagers. I want to be in a Bible study. I want to learn the Word of God. I want to have areas of fellowship, whether it's with peers or with people in other, you know, other situations. All of that which is important and the church must be doing. Now, if there is time, then I will see as my individual role to go out and do the mission of Jesus. But the church is existing primarily to meet my needs. And I find the reason why the mission of the church isn't happening for the most part in our nation is that, first of all, it is seen only as an individual mission. Now, I do have a responsibility to do the mission of Jesus and in my neighborhood and at my work and with other families I come encounter, have an encounter with, or as my children are involved in sports, I do have a mission to try and help them meet Jesus. But what is lacking is this collective overall mission of the group, the church, the congregation, the body. And I find that when the body takes on that mission and says we have a collective responsibility, so how do we do children's ministry? How do we do youth ministry? How do we do worship ministry in a way that really helps us not only serve the Christian, but reach people who aren't Christians yet? That's when God really moves into a congregation, and that's what causes congregations to grow.
Paul, would you agree with this statement that in everything a church does, they should think through how it will either reach or include somebody who does not yet know Jesus?
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the things that I do as I work with congregations is I talk about what I call a mission ministry audit, about where you audit every ministry of the church and say, how does this help us reach people who don't know Jesus Christ? So, for example, take a care ministry in a retirement home where people go and visit the Christians who are there. And what I say to them, have you ever thought about saying to the people who live in that retirement home, the next time I come to visit you, I hope you're developing some friendships with people who don't know Jesus, who don't have a background in church, so that when I come and visit, we can sit down and talk about spiritual things. I find that as people, I'm 76, as people get older, you think more about death and what's the future like. And so you even see a ministry of to Christians in the nursing home having an element that reaches out to other people in the nursing home who aren't Christians yet. They haven't become disciples of Jesus. And so how do you conduct the ministry so that does that? That's the kind of thing I think every church should be thinking through, regardless of what the ministry is.
And with the example you gave, it sounds like we don't have to come up with a whole bunch of new and extra things to do. It just sounds like bringing a mindset, a vision to what we're already doing. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it's really going back and saying, how do we redo this ministry to then reach out to the people we already have relationships, so that, as you're dealing with young people, I would hope that any youth group would have not only half the teenagers being from that congregation, but the other half being teenagers who they are having developing relationships with at school, through sports, through gaming, whatever it is, and say, how do they come to the youth meetings so that we have a way to reach out to them as well? And, the Apostle Paul, even in 1 Corinthians, said to the Corinthians, when someone comes into your worship service who's not a believer, there's certain things you will do and there's certain things you won't do. Just the simple thing of every Sunday honoring the guests who are there, perhaps checking out the church, saying, what is Christianity? Even how we talk. I just was asked recently to preach at a mega church. And I started the sermon by saying, many of us who are here are Christ followers. Some of you may not yet know what that means or even understands that, but you're checking it out. I hope you will listen in as we talk about what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And I did that deliberately so at least the guests felt included, not as outsiders looking in, but just as we would honor a guest in our home. We don't change who we are, but we do things differently. We think about that even in the way we conduct Sunday morning worship.
Well, Paul, let me ask you specifically, here in Utah where we serve, if the numbers are correct, 97% of the people in the state do not have a relationship with the Jesus of the Bible. If you had just a couple sentences, to say to those people who do have that relationship with the Jesus of the Bible, what words would you say?
Well, I would say, first of all, even though they may not have a relationship with Jesus Christ, many of them, because of the background of your state and what is there, have at least heard of Jesus Christ and have some idea of who Jesus Christ is and how that may relate somehow to the religious setting and to who, how we think and feel about these things. And then to say, I realize that's not, may not be where you are. So when I talk to you, I want you to tell me your story. I mean, as you have gone through life, how do you look at how you raise your children? How do you look at the relationship between you and your spouse? What do you want for your children in terms of education? What's your story? What's your background? What do you like? What are you good at? What are your fears? And as you begin to listen to people's stories, then you begin to earn the right at times to share your story with them. And then to say, you know, for me, let me tell you a little bit about God's story so that this has been helpful to me. It may not be helpful to you, but here's how we have dealt with that. When my wife or my husband was diagnosed with cancer, and here we've got these young kids, I mean, that's a scary time. You know, what did I do? I mean, there was fear, there was angst, there was all of this. Let me just tell you how, from my perspective, my understanding of Jesus is helped me and helped us to deal with that situation. So I think we need to live in a day and age where we are willing to listen to other people's story. We're also then communicating our story, but then because of who we are, we begin to tie it into God's story.
Sure sounds like what you're talking about is relational and not just propositional, right? We don't just give people some facts, but we care about who they are. And I don't know, I heard a statement a while ago that went something like this: you can never reach somebody you don't love, right? And so if you don't care about somebody, you know, it doesn't matter what we do, but when we enter into real relationship with people, there's an opportunity to hear them, but also to share what God has done for us. Paul, let me switch gears for you a little bit here. As we record this, we are in the middle of the COVID pandemic, and seeing as you do from your vantage point there about the church in America, what do you think are going to be some of the outcomes of this? And especially I'm thinking, you know, there are some good lessons to be learned during this time. What do you think is going to be on the other side of this when we reach whatever the new normal looks like?
I think I'm seeing at least three different results. Now, obviously, the pandemic is terrible. It's heartbreaking to see those who are losing their lives. And then you think of the loved ones who are around all those people and the impact. And, you know, if the mother, a father, a beloved grandparent that dies, that's a difficult time. And so I don't want to minimize that. But I also am seeing some things as it relates to the church that are positive. Most churches in the United States are small. Most churches in the United States are in plateau or decline. And many of these churches have found it very difficult to change. And often because the congregation is older, one of the changes they have resisted, in part because they don't know what to do about it, is how do you move to a digital world? And I'm finding that many small churches are now being forced to change, being forced to make changes in terms of how do we communicate when people can't show up on Sunday? What do we have for children that's going to go across digital platforms? What's going to happen with our youth, or how do we do discipleship? And I'm encouraged, as because I work with a lot of smaller congregations, it is forcing churches that have been resistant to change to begin to make changes, because they realize if we don't make these changes, we are not going to survive. So that's the first thing I have found that I find encouraging. The second thing I have found is for the larger congregations that have more resources, congregations like yours and congregations that are even larger, is many of them are taking this on as not as a problem, but as a challenge. And they're seeing it as an opportunity to say, how can we reach out in ways that we have never reached out before? One of the things that's happening, and it may be happening where you are at the Heights, is every Sunday, there are far more digital devices being connected to the streaming or during the week that then your average worship attendance. I was talking to a church that was averaging about 4,000 in worship attendance before this, and now they have over 7,000 devices every week that are tuning in. And people are beginning to say, you know, maybe this church has something to offer. It is also helping many of the larger churches have much more connection with their congregation. You know, I think somehow we think that fellowship is generated by everybody getting together on Sunday. It really isn't. What you're creating on Sunday is culture. You're not creating community. But there's a lot of community being created as churches develop chat rooms, as they're doing Zoom conferences, as they can target specific groups. And probably in larger churches, many more people are having contact with different staff members that they've never had before because of the situation. So that's the second positive I see. The third positive I see is the human race's number one problem, as your church knows, is the issue of dealing with sin and the penalty of sin, which is death. The second problem, because the number one problem is sin and death, is fear. And we are now living in a nation that for many years saw itself somehow protected from a lot of the fears that impacted the rest of the world. And those fears are here now, and those fears are tied to death. I mean, you know, I watch people, you know, taking their walks down the street or jogging, and, you know, there's not a 6-foot separation. There's sometimes a 20-foot separation because of the fear of death. And if anybody has the answer for dealing not only with the first problem, which is sin and death, but the second problem, which is fear, it's us. And I find this is a right time for churches to begin to say, how can we address those issues that produce this fear to help people meet Jesus Christ, have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and realize that even if the worst occurs, which is death, we have an eternal relationship with Jesus Christ. So I see churches reaching out in ways that they haven't been reaching out before.
That's exciting. And on your last point there, it sounds like, you know, we're often searching for security in a very unsafe world, when in reality, our greatest need is discovering our purpose and really the relationship with God that we were made for and all that is included in that. Because that's one thing we can't lose, right? Come what may, as opposed to our security, our health.
And if you look at the early church in the first 300 years, it was when the plagues came and the Christians ran to help other people deal with the plagues, even sometimes at their own peril. That's what caused the church to grow, because the Christians weren't the ones who were distancing themselves like everybody else was, but they were willing to go to those who were in need. They were the first responders. They were the caregivers. And obviously, it's a different world in which we live, but it should be a model for how churches need to be thinking.
Well, Paul, the time goes quickly here. I have time for one more question. So in light of the fact that people have a little bit more time on their hands, many of them anyway, I know some people are working harder than ever, but a lot of people have more time due to, you know, what being either furloughed or working from home and all that comes with this time of the COVID. What would you recommend for people, if you had to recommend one book that is about following Jesus, and you were going to recommend that one book to people who have some time, what book is that?
There's a new book out that has impressed me highly. In fact, I think it's one of the best books I've seen in the last decade related to the question you asked, Roy. The book is entitled You Found Me. It is written by Rick Richardson. Rick Richardson is head of the Billy Graham Center and teaches evangelism at Wheaton College. And there has been new research done by the Billy Graham Center in conjunction with Lifeway, directed by Ed Stetzer, that shows that there are literally millions of Americans who we have tended to think don't want to hear the gospel, have turned off against church, that shows that if it is done well, people are open to having very intimate conversations in relationship to God, in relationship to Jesus, in relationship to their life. And the first four chapters really summarize some pretty startling statistics about the number of people in our culture that are open, including those that we refer to as the millennials and Generation Z, the younger congregation, the younger people who often aren't in our congregations. So number one, the first four chapters, I find, present a much more optimistic view than many Christians have. But then what they have done is they have examined the top 10% of churches, because only 10% of the churches in the United States are growing by reaching not only church people, but unchurched people. Other churches are growing by the transfer of Christians, but there's only 10% of Christians that are growing by their churches reaching people who have very little or no formal relationship with church. And they show you specifically what these churches are doing. And I believe providing a model of evangelism that is designed for 2020. And most the models of evangelism I was taught were great in the 1900s. Sometimes they don't work in the 2000s. But they show a model of evangelism about how you begin to reach out in a relational way. What do you do? How do you do it? And I think it's an excellent book to say, if we want to know not only what I should be doing to reach out, but what should our church be doing, it's the best thing I've seen in a long time.
Wow, that sounds great. I look forward to getting my hands on it myself. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time. And we here at Washington Heights, we are better for the relationship we have with you and the influence that you have had here. Thank you for your time today as well. And we just hope and pray that God continues to bless you and your many opportunities to help more people meet and follow Jesus.
You are welcome. And first of all, thanks for inviting me. And Roy, I want to thank you and the Heights Church, because knowing your church, I know that this is the way your leaders are trying to move the church. And I want to commend you for the work you all are doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir, and hopefully we'll talk to you one day again soon.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Paul. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.